This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I am your host, Hubert Edwards, on The Essentials, The Reset. Certainly a pleasure to have you here this evening as we're going to have ourselves, like we always do, a wonderful conversation. We're going to ask you to join us. Numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316. And 325-4259, our text line 422-4796. And I'm sure there are many persons out there who definitely will want to get in on this conversation. So this evening, we're going to discuss, despite the myriad of things which are happening out there, we're going to discuss one which has been discussed by many others, I'm sure, across the course since the time it happened. But definitely we want to have a go at this. And that's the lecture given by the Honorable Prime Minister Brave Davis in discussing the National Development Plan and providing, I would say, some insight into his approach, his go at this idea of leadership, of leading a country. And he started out by saying he wanted this particular discussion, or at least he believes that discussions which are enlightening and provoking are some of the best discussions. Nothing there to disagree with. I totally agree with that. If there isn't some level of provocativeness in an argument, then sometimes it just becomes blase, unforgettable, and really does not impress upon the mind of others, don't cause anybody to have a need for thinking, or at least thinking too deeply. And so setting that benchmark, setting that basis of performance or for success, I think was interesting. Right up front, he wanted to do that. So we want to take a walk through, not necessarily his exact speech, but kind of how we heard it, we saw it, and the things that we kind of took away from it. So I just wanted to go into a discussion like that with you this evening. And if you have some input, certainly would want to hear it. Now, we're not going to do the political thing. We're not going to have the conversation which says, well, the Prime Minister didn't say anything simply because you have a different political philosophy, or that the Prime Minister said everything absolutely right and correct simply because you shared his political philosophy. What we want to do is to have a discourse which, you know, provide your views, your opinions, but don't have to get into the dogmas, into the dogmatic type of a position. So everything I say here really now is going to be my personal views, the way I see it, or at least the way I choose to see it. Because there are many different perspectives from which one could view this presentation. I know that other persons in discussing it have kind of latched on the politics of it. Other persons latch on the economics of it. Other persons saw it from the perspective of him as the prime minister, the human being in his delivering, and they focus on that. So there are multiple perspectives, but this is the one which I choose to focus on. And so these are really my personal views. And I've chosen to look at this on the basis of what are the greater values that we can glean, the greater value to be gleaned for the benefit of the country. And I think that is an important context. There is many pros and cons on this. In some ways, it's a simple, straightforward speech. At another level, there are great subtleties and complexities in the presentation itself that, you know, if you have time, and certainly for me in different fora, you could drill into. There's a lot to unwrap, a lot which can be taken away from this particular speech. But where I want to start is this, that for anyone who has been paying attention to the Prime Minister over the last 18 months or so, that would have been before he became Prime Minister, when he was leading the charge of his party to become elected. If you were paying close attention to his pronouncements up to that time, prior to the election and subsequent to the election, if you were paying close attention and would have taken the time out to read and digest the blueprint for change, if in the various national discussion, especially the budget presentation, also in his swearing-in speech, if you paid attention to those, kind of go behind the words and go between the lines and really look at them in a fundamental way of, okay, I'm listening to this man speak, I'm listening to the Prime Minister speak, and I am accepting him at his words, that these things that he's saying represents him and represents him at a core. It represents kind of the essence of what he wants to bring to the fore about himself, about his leadership, about his approach at this particular point in time. It is my proposition that if you were doing that to a level, and I am here kind of suggesting that I have been paying some attention in that regard to some extent, then the things which were said in the lecture, during the lecture, were generally normal, not the historical exposé, which I think provided a very good context on which to discuss national development, because it really took out some things. And I'll say a little bit more on that, because I believe that while it was a great approach to present and create a platform for the discussion, the Prime Minister kind of painted that in such a way where it took away some of the potency, took away some potency from the effect that it could have had. But basically, what I heard was normal and relatively consistent with what the Prime Minister has been saying and doing and announcing and pronouncing over the last 18 months. So I think he has effectively outlined what I believe to be the essence of how he desires his leadership to be terminated, his legacy, if you will. If you look a couple of years down the road, so take a look with me, he might be saying, a couple of years down the road, this is really how I want to be looked back on and for persons to say, these are the things which my leadership at the helm of the country as the prime minister delivered, created, caused to happen. So basically, he has some desired outcomes for his leadership. And by and large, I believe that the major aspect of that outcome is to create circumstances in which there is greater economic equity, greater focus on human and social dignity, and a set of outcomes where, as he puts it, the many benefits more than has been the case up to this point. And there is greater evidence of provision for human dignity. So it's not simply that persons are going about in a more individualistic or smaller grouping type of a way. But I think he's seeking to secure an environment, and in the speech he talks about culture. He's seeking to create an environment, a shift in how we do country, such that there's always this, I think, strong emphasis on human dignity. So between me and you and the other persons, we are all concerned about how the ordinary guy, people like me and you, how we are going to get a leg up, how we are going to move forward, how we are going to become better persons. Because we are in a society, because we are in a cultural framework and regime. As the Prime Minister said, not the hardcore culture that we think about when we use the word culture, but how do we do things? How do we relate to each other? How do we interact with each other? So from that perspective, while there is room for disagreement, I'm sure, there are some things which I hear, would have heard, and maybe agree with, or I would have heard and disagree with and say, maybe you shouldn't have said it that way, or you could have said it differently. And, you know, I know some persons may be saying, well, you know, how can you tell the prime minister? Every single individual in their own private space have, I think, that intellectual lease to critique anybody. But here I am saying that while there is room for disagreement, you may see it one way, I may see it differently. I think at the end of the day, the Prime Minister came off as being very consistent and highly authentic in that particular presentation. That's a starting point for me. And that is important. Consistency and authenticity. Because consistency in and of itself have serious implication for credibility. And as a result of being consistent over the last 18 months or wherever, whatever time, I'm sure from a personal perspective, it may go further. But obviously, these are the things that we were hearing in the public square. So that came over, and the authenticity, I think, was powerful. And it makes you want to listen just to see whether, if for nothing else, there are going to be any cracks in that authenticity. It is my view that throughout the speech, for the most part, except for some aspect which I'll discuss, it was generally so. I think we have a caller coming in. So, caller, you're on Guardian Radio, The Essentials. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello, good evening.
Yes, sir. You know, Mr. Edwards, you know, you talk about the Prime Minister and his words about dignity, you know. You know, that's the prime minister pondering to the poor among us, right? And you know, he talks about the dignity and wages, like the livable wage, going from a minimum wage that needs to be a livable wage, right? And housing, you know. But my point to the prime minister is that he has been the prime minister for quite some months now. And to bring some dignity and wages, all it takes is a legislation, you know, a livable wage legislation, you know. And as it pertains to housing, you know, dignity and housing. Housing isn't ownership of a house, of a building, you know. That's being able to live in a house, in a building, you know. And that's like a affordable rent. You know, like public housing, not ownership. You know, and you know we and it's like he's painting this picture for the poor people. That's like pure dreams. You know, it's like fairy tale. Would you say to that?
I would agree with you that he's painting a picture. I would agree with you that he is targeting the persons amongst us who would fall within the grouping that you mentioned. I, at this point in time, could not be. I think it would be unfair for me to say that he's creating a fairy tale. Because as the prime minister and as an individual who is responsible for national development, he's not only saying that these are the things which need to happen, but he's also outlining, hasn't gone into any massive detail, but, you know, based on the lecture the other night, there clearly there's more to come. There must be more to come. So you know, if he's planning on doing certain things with those persons in mind, then obviously it would be, I think it would be harsh at this point in time, at least, to say that those are fairy tale, unless you believe it's possible.
He had been the prime minister for quite a while. Legislation is all it takes to do a livable wage, you know, and housing. The way our governments has been doing housing is about building low cost homes. That's not a housing for the poor.
Okay.
You know where's that housing for the poor?
Yeah, but to be fair, I think I don't know the exact number. The prime minister has been the prime minister for a couple of months, and the changes which need to be made, sometimes, you know, you can't rush into everything at once. Now,
there's nothing on the drawing board for public housing. There's nothing on the drawing board for housing for the poor.
Mm-hmm.
If there is, please tell me. The low-cost home is not housing for the poor.
No, I could align myself with your discussion on that. I understand where you're going because
right. So why lie to the poor people and says, "Well, this is what we don't for them for you. We're creating public housing for you," and it's not true.
The only point I'm making, I think you are too strong when you say it's lying and it's fairy tale, given the newness of the administration. If we were sitting at year 3 and 4. And this was the same narrative, then maybe I would have seen it differently. But I think it's early
days. That's the same narrative. They all say that, you know, it's housing for the poor.
Okay.
Low-cost housing. See, but one more thing. You know, we in this country, we practice this capitalist form of government, right? And some of us call ourselves progressive, you know, and we are speak of the words, echo the words and the sentiments and the cliches of Milton Friedman, right? A man that championed capitalism, the corporate greed. In fact, he talks about the greed of individuals being necessary. You understand me for the economy, right? But we and that's all he did. He was there. Every word from his mouth was about. Pro-corporatization, you know, pro-privatization, but we never want to quote the words of people Richard Wolff, you know, someone that's equal to him, you know, on the opposite side. See, we in this country gotta be real. We gotta stop quoting the capitalist champions and call ourselves progressive.
Okay.
I'm calling. Hello.
Okay, I hear you.
We come in these shows, right? But we promote, we advertise for corporations, you know, and it's all about private good. You know what I'm saying? It's never about public good. A private corporation has never had the interest of the public at heart. You know, these are facts. Things like we are all capitalists. Our shows, you know, Aaron Green and the show that comes on Saturday, they are the only socialist shows in this bar.
All right. Thank you so much for your contribution.
And that's sad, man.
Thank you so much. You know, again, I think we have to appreciate that, you know, people think differently. Here's a gentleman who is on a radio station saying, you know, these are mostly capitalists and he's espousing socialist ideas without recognizing or acknowledging that he is given the freedom to do that. Not everyone is going to be aligned with that type of a thinking. I'm not sure. I honestly am not sure that, you know, most of these shows are overtly capitalistic, but to each his own. So I believe that this lecture was extremely useful because it was for the first time since the draft was completed. I think it was completed in 2016, which was very close to the run-up of the election. And the administration back then, the Christie's administration, had grafted a number of elements from that National Development Plan into its manifesto. But beyond that, no administration had embraced it. The only chance was for the Free National Movement. But as the National Development Plan is a draft and remains in a draft because it has not been nationally sanctioned. It hasn't gone the round for national acceptance and consensus. However, over the years, persons have discussed and drilled into it and talk about it so much that we are aware that there's broad-based, you know, acknowledgement, at least, of it, and in many areas, broad-based acceptance. So it is good that the Prime Minister did this because, you know, the fact that aspect filter here and filter there, but no full overall agreement or ratification, I don't think is useful and at least weakens the effort that was put into this. So, you know, it's therefore a very important and fundamental development towards the development of the country. It augurs well for there to be a broad framework as the National Development Plan and the vision which it espoused would represent, against which we can develop and forge development, and against which that development can be managed and measured. So from that respect, if nothing else, the lecture did that. It acknowledged the existence of the National Development Plan, and it spoke to the possibilities of this being invoked or this being ratified, secured, agreed sometime in the future. Certainly not this year, as one response from the Prime Minister would have noted, but certainly the possibility exists that it's going to be somewhere down the line. So the Prime Minister's approach in taking a historical context, laying out this historical context to national development, I think was interesting. It was insightful. There was a lot which came out of that for me, where I, from the perspective that I was listening to. Now, if you were to hear what the Prime Minister said, he talked about kleptocracy, he talked about the status quo, he talked about government supporting private endeavor. But if I propose that if we, you and I, were to objectively sit in the market square and observe what is happening in the country today, this very minute, as we speak, many of those things are actually still happening, maybe to a lesser extent. Like, for example, the practices which were pre-1967 or around 1967, I'm not sure that I would say that they're totally gone. But for the most part, yes. Many of those practices remain with us, but certainly at maybe a lower level, have lesser impact, but nonetheless, they're still there. So, sober reflection, the Prime Minister having brought these things up, I think it demands sober reflection that we look at our current realities. Because in that discourse of taking us down the road from pre-1967, 1968, 1973, and upwards, the Prime Minister effectively went on a adventure of identifying what I will term some of the important and critical debilitating aspects which are present in the country, which would have retarded, restricted, constrained development over the years. And to the extent that you may argue against that, if we look at it in a macro sense to say, yes, there's been growth and development, and the things which were done doesn't, in when looked at in totality, may not have adversely impacted the movement of the country as a whole. Even if you argue that, I think there is an accurate space to argue that it would have robbed, some of these things would have robbed more broad-based development or broad-based growth for certain segments of the society. I think that segment which the Prime Minister generally referred to as the many. So if we make the argument that the sum total would be the same, a counter argument to that would that there would be greater diversification and spread of that growth and development over the years. And I believe that would be an elegant argument to make, given what we, if we're objective and honest in our discourse, that we see on very often, or what would have been played out, recorded by historical facts. We have another caller on the line. Caller, go ahead. You're on The Essentials.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Edwards. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing fantastic, Sparky.
I hope your family is doing well. And God bless
family, family and everybody doing well.
Well, my input, or my observation, Mr. Edwards, is also from my personal point of view, because as I look back, as we're talking about the 49th year, and we headed towards celebrating number 50, God's will, our life next year. But now I look back over the 49, because at 1973, I was a 22-year-old guy just coming out of government high and starting to work in the, I went into the banking field, Deltek International, and I watched us start off at, when everybody was getting the opportunity to get scholarships and go off, because education was the main factor in building the country at that time. As a youngster, I remember getting into banking and being able to go to the bank, and like I, you know, I was informed, I was advised by my father, son, the first thing you do is try to buy yourself a piece of property. Don't worry about no motorbike and no car. Get yourself a piece of property. When you get your property, you could use the property papers as collateral to go get your car. When you get that, you get your little family, you can start on your foundation, you bring your house up to Bell Court, you go to the bank and try to finish it. But now, 49 years later, we could have bought a piece of property somewhere around here for $20,000 or so forth. You know, understand what I'm saying, Mr. Edwards?
Mm-hmm.
But when I look around New Providence, basically most of the population is flocking to New Providence. I'm not saying New Providence is overcrowded, but they flock into New Providence because things are tough in the family islands. They're looking for better education setups and a better way of life. So now when we look around, and when I look at my children and my grandchildren, for them to go around New Providence, there's only two pieces of land around here, either privately owned land or government land. They're not displacing the land to the people. And my children and my grandchildren, they can't afford to buy a piece of property in their own country. I wouldn't talk about just buying the property. By the time you finish paying for the property, with all the bank fees and all the bank charges, you might be an old man and you haven't even started building your house yet.
Okay.
So you're depending on your children to finish building the dream, building the house. And that's the state. It's like we're moving backwards, not forward. Only the few hand-picked elites are moving into the big areas with their pool and their big houses and three-story houses and cable beach and out by the caves and so forth. You can see the big homes going up. Only certain people in this country can afford to buy property and land all around Carmichael and Road would belong to the government. People trying to squatter the land and steal the land because they can't afford to buy it.
Okay.
What do we do?
All right, let's talk about it. Thank you so much for your contribution, Sparky. We will continue to talk about it because you make some valid points. You make some valid points because at the end of the day, if there is going to be growth and development, if there is going to be any type of achievement over time, then certainly when you look at what is available for those who are coming up and seeking to do their own thing, to become, grown folks, to do adult things in terms of owning property, growing wealth, and so on and so forth. If the chances and the opportunities for doing so has reduced, then certainly, as you said, we're moving backwards. But interestingly, I believe, now you may wish to argue the effectiveness. I could argue the effectiveness with you or how it may pan out. But I believe that if you step back and you look at the pronouncement of the Prime Minister in this particular lecture, he was kind of speaking to that. Didn't say those things specifically in terms of land ownership and things, but he used terms like this, a sense of dignity, self-worth, and achievement. A young man who buys a property, able to build a house, to get married, raise a child, raise a family with, children, send them off to school or whatsoever it is, that certainly can, that type of a development in his life over time could be encapsulated in these words uttered by the Prime Minister: sense of dignity, self-worth, achievement. So in an important way, I think the lecture spoke to some of the exact points you're making, Sparky. But you talk about this whole idea of the kleptocracy, the entrenched status quo, or where the government would be unreasonably supporting private efforts. So basically, political speak for saying persons who are attached to or associated with certain groupings benefits unreasonably because of those associations. So having laid those out, I believe that the Prime Minister have kind of set a benchmark for himself, that these limitations which have been identified by him in his speech through what I consider to be an honest acknowledgement have to be given serious consideration. The consideration around this have to be very prominent. The strategies going forward must take these into consideration because we have already identified through the Prime Minister's words that these are great debilitators. They have created significant adverse pressure on the growth and development of the country, or at least on the growth and development of segments of the society. And so any fix going forward, any serious discussion about national development, which is going to be in us with a sense of great dignity and equity and so on and so forth, must take these into consideration, because they have to either be reduced or eliminated for the outcome which is desired to be there. So the discourse which the Prime Minister took when he gave the historical context, I think, as I mentioned before, was good, pretty good. Learned a lot, put some things into context. But the way it terminated was basically, and there's no roundabout way of saying this, it terminated such that the PLP seemed to have done way better than the FNM over time, but basically done not enough, may have done some wrongs, but on the part of the PLP, that was not pointed out. And I think in that regard, the Prime Minister, you know, may have gone a little further than he would have wanted or should have gone, given that, in my mind, the moment was one of unification. It was a call for a thing which needed to be agnostic to political divide, which needed to be agnostic to, you know, where you were in your own personal philosophical stance, maybe 20 years ago or 25 years ago. It for me, it was supposed to be kind of more clinically pointed towards the future and how he, as a Prime Minister, would want to, using the words that he put out there, create a new culture of looking at things national, at looking at things which are going to create the greatest benefit for the many as opposed to the few. And so in that regard, and I think that for me was the maybe the low point of the presentation, that could have been excluded. But that said, we now understand from the Prime Minister's discussion that if we are going to move forward, if we are going to do this national development thing, then one have to go back and take a look at all the periods and everything that went good and what went bad. We have to do that objectively. We have to do that honestly, because it is out of these various historical segments, out of these eras, that the overarching points which he made earlier emerge. They didn't occur in one segment and not in the next segment, or in a past segment and not of a future one. By the Prime Minister's own words and admission, there were important elements which ran through from the pre-1967 all the way up to before he became the Prime Minister. And so consequently, to discuss it in such a way which then advantages one group and maybe disadvantages one group, at least for persons looking in and trying to understand, I think that needs to be reconciled at a minimum. There needs to be a reconciliation between the words which says these things exist, but the excursion through the various periods didn't highlight the existence in some segment of that historical journey. That's pretty much what I'm saying. And so as we look at how the Prime Minister therefore then used that as a platform to catapult to the future, and the things that he would want to see, how he wants to do it, how he wants to lead, the legacy he wants to leave, These are my words. I'm just digging into it. He kind of set the tone because he went at the individual and he said some things which I want to outline to you. But before I do that, I want to kind of take you back to what I consider to be the beginning. Where are these things coming from? Why do I say that they are consistent? Why do I say that they come with great authenticity? Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to share with you segments of the Prime Minister's swearing-in speech, which will clue you in and give you, I think, a good framework of understanding why the things that he said and the way he said and how he's charting his leadership ought not to be surprising to those who pay attention. You listen to The Essentials, The Reset, and Guardian 96.9 FM. Don't move. Come right back.
When faced with an illness like cancer, we band together, and we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world, Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
The Access Accelerator Small Business Development Center is here to help small businesses throughout the entire Bahamas. To better serve you, we've made it easier to contact us. Call 461-7232, WhatsApp 359-0626 or 359-2394, email helpdesk@sbdcbahamas.com or submit a ticket when you visit our help center at accessaccelerator.org. The Access Accelerator, empowering small business.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to The Essentials to the Reset. We're having a walk through the lecture presented by the Prime Minister. I'm not going through his actual words, but I'm giving you my impression of what I listened to, what I heard, what I observed. And I want to make the shift now to the personal, because I believe that that's where the big crux of his leadership will lie. Now, one caller said earlier, the Prime Minister is pondering. I think it's too early to say that. If he is, eventually it will become known. But it's certainly agreeable that his message is going to a particular segment of the society. So on swearing in, highlighting the challenges that the country still have at this point in time, the Prime Minister stated that, you know, some have questioned why we want to serve when the problems are so difficult. But my team and I offer ourselves for public services public service precisely because these problems are so difficult and precisely because we believe that we have the right vision, the right policies, and the right team to take this country forward. So from the very beginning, the Prime Minister have been outlining this idea of having the right policies. Well, you don't expect anything different. He said, we will not fail if we keep the best interests of the Bahamian people as our guiding North Star. There you have it, Mr. Caller. So it's the Bahamian people in general. Then he goes on to share his story. As a young boy growing up in Cat Island, I faced many hardships and obstacles. I know what it is to be poor. The pandering that you spoke about, if it is not pandering, your words, you say pandering, for the time being, we're totally going to give the Prime Minister the benefit of the doubt. But the point I'm trying to make here is, he says, I know what it is to be poor. Have to be coming from an authentic place, a place of knowing. An individual who puts his story out there, say, well, you know, I grew up as a poor young man. As a young man trying to find his first job, I face doors that seem always slammed shut. I know what it is to feel disappointment. As a lawyer trying to build a practice, I miss out on many opportunities because I didn't have the right connections. I know what it is like to be on the outside looking in. In my family life, I know the ups and downs of raising children and sending them out into the world. I am determined to take the wisdom gained from these experiences and use it to help others. It is possible to overcome. It is possible to work hard and succeed. It is possible to forgive. It is possible to bring out the changes you wish to see. These are the values that will inform my decisions in office. Let me read that again. These are the values that will inform my decisions in office. The values which says it's possible to overcome, possible to work hard and succeed, possible to forgive, and possible to bring out the changes you want to see. So let's go back to the Prime Minister lecture, because he's espousing some changes which are needed. So it focused on the individual. It went to say, yes, the individual is there. And there is a role for the government. And this government role is to assist with human development, facilitating this dignity of achievement, and creating a more hopeful set of circumstances for the ordinary citizens, for the poor man, if you will. That's my interpretation of what he is saying. I believe that this reflects, having read what I just read from his swearing-in speech, I think you would agree, that this seemed to reflect the heart of the Prime Minister. It is closely held, authentic view of how the country should be run, how it should be led, and what the outcomes are supposed to be. Obviously, in any approach, there are going to be advantages and disadvantages. There are going to be pronouncements that sometimes ask you to maybe scratch your head a little bit to reconcile it, and I'm going to touch on one such later. So it is critical that the country, based on what the Prime Minister is outlining, that the country start to experience greater equity in opportunities, equity in education, equity for healthcare, equity for individuals of any walk, any stripe, any creed, to be able to become socially and economically upwardly mobile, regardless of the socioeconomic place that they start. Regardless of where they live, regardless of who their parents are, regardless of what challenges they have from an economic point of view, regardless of how humble their circumstances may be. And those individuals should have the opportunity to pursue their dreams individually, collectively, and they should have the opportunity to thrive. That is my takeaway from the statement made as it relates to speaking to the individual. So these are really, really important foundational issues in terms of national development, because I would posit that it is only when the broadest or at least a significant critical mass of citizens and residents have these opportunities for upward mobility, have the opportunity to express their potential to the fullest, have the opportunity to chase their dreams and chase their ideas and their desire, only when they have the opportunity to do that and to activate, actionize, and bring those into reality, is the overall growth and development of the country fully optimized. Only then. What do I mean by that? Well, one person can own all the wealth in the country, and the country could be the richest country in the world. But only one person owns everything. But the extent to which the wealth can be spread, the extent to which other persons can be enabled, and you have development in human capital and human capacity, the fact that one person can make the country the richest in the world, hypothetically, when the other individuals join with him and have the capacity to do more, then obviously that country is going to outpace its nearest competitor that much farther. And that's basically how the overall macro national development is going to benefit from the micro development of individuals, the citizen and the resident, the person on the ground who wants to have a better day, who wants to have a better outcome in life, who wants to become better educated, to change his or her personal circumstance. And when you bring it all together, you create that national genius, and it spills over, and more persons benefit. In the words of the Prime Minister, the many benefits more than may be currently being realized. So I think that is important. A very, very important element to these. So the National Development Plan, you also pointed out, should be seen from the perspective of, you know, flexibility. You know, we're not talking about something which is written in stone, the Holy Grail. He did use the term Holy Grail in one regard. But viewed with flexibility, understanding that different persons will come at it from different perspectives, with different ideas, different strategies. But the whole point here is that you have a national development plan which represents guardrails for growth. Guardrails which prevent us from starting over every single time. Guardrails which prevent us from, you know, planning and not executing, from spending without value, from doing things which have been done and known to have been done, but is not really at the forefront because we are driven by short-termism, he said, in 5-year cycle. So it's fundamentally important that you listen to these things, that we listen to these things, and we kind of drill down behind what has been said in a more deeper way. And so these are some of the things which I took away from that. That, you know, the Prime Minister kind of made it clear that, look, you know, I am a big picture person. I'm not going to seek to run the country like a small business. It's big business, and what big business involves, big strategic thinking, big long-term plan, that's how I'm going to do it. One interesting point that came away from me is that it seemed like, I can't be 100% sure, but it would appear that there is a centrist position from the Pinlin era and the Hubert Ingraham era, a combination of those two. There's a centrist position which excites the Prime Minister. And it would be very certainly insightful for me to get a more deeper unwrapping of what that represents. Now, we can all speculate. We can go back to the Pinlin era. We can look at the Ingram era. And we can kind of draw our conclusion. But he used the word centrist. It means that if he was to sit between the two, which, you know, in some aspect of his life, obviously, he has been there. But he's more middle of both. And so as we talk about national development, as we talk about strategy, we talk about policy, I think it's important to bear that in mind because it provides us with a benchmark for understanding where we may be going or where the prime minister might want to go in his thinking. He also outlined, and I think this is important, I mentioned to you, I would come to this in a bit, he outlined this whole idea of where the economy falls in his list of priorities. And some persons may readily say, well, you know it's wrong. Why is the economy going to be number three or number four in a list? Because, you know, like the great man, or well, at least, I don't know if he's great, but the guy in the United States said, it's the economy. It's all about the economy. But why might the prime minister be thinking of the economy has been of a lesser priority than, say, education and some other things? Maybe, again, he's being informed by his own personal background and the fact that he can immediately and authentically relate to the fact that education is one of the greatest enablers of individuals. And the extent to which individuals are enabled, the extent to which they grow and develop, become a facilitator and become facilitating for national growth and development, which affects the economic side of it, which therefore means that you are going to have ultimately greater outcomes on one hand, because there are more capable people pushing in that direction. But more aligned with his discussion, the callers call it pandering, but more aligned with that line of argument is the fact that when the persons are so empowered, are so enabled, they have the ability to glean greater value from this growth and development. Because if you remember in the lecture, he keep harping on the point that while there have been improvements, while there have been some growth, fundamentally the economic arrangement of the country didn't change much. I.e., the benefits, the value flowed to a narrow sphere of individuals as opposed to be broad-based. I believe that's what he's saying. And that change, I think, is at the core of his desire to move, which then clues us in on the fact that maybe the prime minister believes that some aspects of this economy, as we understand it, the economic arrangement, needs to be tweaked. So over several administrations, the basic tenets of the economic model, despite the changes which have been made, despite improvements, despite innovation, whatsoever, it has generally remained unchanged. And this is a reality when you kind of arrest them to some of the negative things which have been highlighted before, you know, the early kleptocracy, the entrenchment of the status quo, the oversupport of government. When you put them together, if the prime minister's words is to be accepted, if his position is to be accepted, then certainly one would expect that his policy output, the way he's going to drive his leadership or the management of the country going forward, is going to create frictions on what currently exists. Because in my mind, and certainly I would think in the minds of many, if the arrangement don't change, then the desired result to the many that is spoken of is not likely to happen. So is it a possibility that, you know, there's some tweaks. There's some changes. How those will look, I don't know. You know, the Bahamas is not, you know, overly complex economy. But of course, we can see through discussion around cryptocurrency and carbon sink and stuff. The Prime Minister is thinking differently in some instances. Innovatively, creatively, will all of these things ultimately pan out? We'll have to give them time to see. But there's some things to be had. So there's some principles which he outlined, right? The principle of second chance, or maybe multiple chance, I've heard someone else said. I think that is fundamental. It can't be that the first time you fail, the fact that you didn't graduate high school, the fact that you didn't get a whole ton of BGCSE, the fact that you went to UB and you dropped out, the fact that you started a business and it wasn't successful, it can't be that these things become fatal for your own time on earth as a Bahamian or as a resident living here. It can't be that. So an environment which creates multiple chance, I think, is important. And I certainly like that idea, because I believe that when we look at certain nuances around the country, right, more needs to be done to ensure that there isn't a wasting of human capacity as we know it. We talk about the context of the National Development Plan having flexibility. I think that is important. And also that the government's supposed to be facilitative. But, however, the individual must do the heavy lifting for themselves. I think that is fundamental. So here's the Prime Minister laying out, I think, a path where the ordinary folk, the ordinary guy, the Joe on the street, has the chance, the opportunity to become better, to achieve more, to glean more value from the patrimony of the country. But he's not getting a pass. He has to do the heavy lifting. Now, that type of a thinking obviously kind of pushes tension on some of the arrangements that we see, you know, the connections, the facilitating, because we are within, you know, small groups. That broader thinking, I think, exerts some pressure on that. And certainly, it says to me that if this is the way the Prime Minister is thinking, then he's also looking at how his policies may cause a fundamental shift in some cultural aspect. And again, we're not talking about junkuno or arts or painting. We're talking about how persons do what they do. The Prime Minister kind of said that in his speech himself. Because there has to be a recognition that if some of these things are going to materialize, there need to be a cultural shift. We have to think differently, work differently, do things differently, be more occupied with the well-being of others around us and not just that narrow, selfish outlook. It have to be fundamental. So I think that's kind of down the road where the thinking may be headed. We have a caller on the line. Caller, go ahead. You're on Essentials.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Edwards. Good evening. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me, Mr. Edwards?
I can hear you.
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening, man.
Yeah, you know, I was right here listening, so I decided to chime in. I thought your last words was kind of okay with the PM as far as him being selfless, right, and thinking about the average person. And so somebody told me that he had actually mentioned that he didn't think it was fair for the Americans to come here and be unvaccinated and we couldn't do likewise. So I don't know if he said that, but if he did, right, I would like to thank him, because somebody said he had mentioned it. And he seems to be trying to cover a broad spectrum, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I was hoping to hear, to see more details on the carbon credit paradigm or model, because no one is following China's model. All right, so in China, you're given a stimulus, right,
mm-hmm.
or a monetary reward riding a bicycle, catching a ferry, collective riding, I guess, the bus, et cetera, et cetera. And so if you're reducing, well, I should make it simple. If you're reducing your personal carbon footprint, which is in all event will end up being a collective effort to reduce carbon footprint, and then you have other countries doing it. And so China had said in this carbon scenario that, and I agree with China in this sense, but nothing else. They said that when the West was developing, because I've said this on the radio about a year ago, and I said it subsequently, when the West and other countries were developing their countries, they were not sustaining their development. Because I've, you know what I mean? So now they're asking third world countries to do likewise. So I'm seeing this carbon credit construct as a very difficult construct. Even as far as calculating, mean, you know, there's no sensible deductive dialogue or reasoning. When you look at carbon as being the source of all life and the way how it's going to be calculated, there are too many variables for it to be as accurate as possible. I know the PM had mentioned the seagrass and all of the sea flora, right, that actually photosynthesize. But and it's something came to mind. And let me get to how difficult this carbon scam is. There are actually some I can't remember, there's some phytoplankton, some type of zooplankton. I can't remember the name, but I've read it years ago. They actually photosynthesize also. So you have, they think they part plant, part organism. They actually photosynthesize also. And so the fact that they haven't arrived at a multiplier to calculate the carbon, 1.5, 3.5, et cetera, et cetera. There's not a consensus on that. And also, when they do this infrared carbon account for the in the atmosphere, like how many carbon dioxide is in the atmosphere, that's only a spatial analogy of what is there. So I've been reading up on it, right? And
okay.
It seems more of a financial, but I mean the country can benefit from it. But and I noticed the PM mentioned the vast oceans that we have. And so maybe if someone could just, if we could just have a real town hall meeting on this, because people's minds need to be opened up and not just be driven and stared in the way that humanity, the globalists, wants our minds to go.
Okay.
Because when you look at this this carbon construct, I'm not even going to get into the anthropogenic, which is the carboniferous carbon, because the gentleman called on Dwight's show and they tried to dismiss what he was saying, but I get what he was trying to say, even though he couldn't articulate himself that well, but he knew what he was saying. But he was a little off. But when you look at it, it's very difficult, even with vehicles. Each vehicle, I could have the same vehicle as you, and it could be in a different condition, and it could still put out more carbon dioxide.
And I totally agree with you.
And carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide also converts to carbon dioxide.
Yes.
So this is a very difficult situation to calculate. So that's why I'm very off.
Yeah, and we all have to wait until we see what the science and the calculations
are. Yeah, but what I wanted to touch on was...
Yeah, I have to run now. Though.
Yeah, but I want them... Nobody's talking about debt for nature swap. And that's a part of the carbon credit system.
All right. We'll talk about that some other time. Definitely, it is going to be, this whole carbon credit thing is going to be interesting. I think the administration has thought consistently that the science has been done, but like 52 said, the calibration, you know, exactly how we're going to leverage that, you know, let's wait and see. One texter says, even sir, many of us see the PM speech as only words. We have witnessed this type of talk for decades and we see no plan being implemented to change anything. I mean, I can understand where your sentiments is coming from. For my part, I like to give persons the benefit of the doubt, especially when things are new. So this is a new administration. This individual has never been a prime minister before. So let's kind of wait and see. Let's take our first clip. We have some words from the prime minister directly. So let's take this. I have a couple of them and we need to get through very quickly before we run out of show. First one, Mr. Producer.
Lift up your head.
No, not that. Not that. Not at all. Well, let's go on. That's way down in the 1 hour version of the show. Okay, so let's talk about some of the things which the Prime Minister might have achieved, right? And what might have been missing. I think from my perspective, the fact that the the party, his party, clearly would have embraced the National Development Plan. It was outlined in the manifesto. If you go through the 10 points in the manifesto, the words slipped me at this point, you would see elements of that plan in there. So one of the things which struck me, or at least stood out for me, I had expected to get a clearer delineation of the timeline for adoption. I think it was Shivaga Leng who asked and say, definitely we are going to embrace this, but is it going to be this year? Not sure. So that was a little bit fuzzy. The Prime Minister promised to re-engage the committee. And so we'll see exactly where we go from this. So from my perspective. But I think the thing that we can't lose is the fact that here is the CEO of the country who's publicly turning his attention to the creation, or at least the agreement and the crystallization of a strategic framework for the growth and development. So even though we have not been given a timeline, this cannot be seen as a lesser event or an event without impact, because he is in fact committing to a regime which will create benchmark for growth, for measuring growth, a framework for national development, and a way of creating a vision and a set of plans for the future. So that in and of itself is significant. I think also, I see there was a caller. Caller, please call back. I just wanted to get through that point before coming to you. So if you can call back, then call back. So we have to, though I would have wanted, me personally would have wanted to hear that based on some work already done, we believe that we are going to put this out to consultation in X time. But maybe the more prudent way to do it is to reconvene the committee, dust it off properly, and then put it out into the atmosphere for discussion. Caller, you are on Guardian Radio, The Essential. Go ahead. Good evening. Welcome to The Essentials.
Good evening, Mr. Evans. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing great.
See, you said I was doing your job.
Pardon me?
See, you said they're doing your job. You're just doing your job, sir.
I am doing my job, yeah.
When you cut out the national anthem just now and disappoint him is so bad just now, when that play, you're never supposed to cut people anthem and thing and just
no,
that was the place straight to be to celebrate independence, you know, Mr. Edwards.
No, I don't know why you're coming up with that. That was not the clip I was
asking for. The anthem started to play. I standard attention.
Okay.
The program like that.
My apologies for anyone who would have felt
no, you got to let that play, though.
Huh?
That's the only way you got to let that play, because you can't cut down something like that. You got to let that play.
I disagree
that's
with you.
Separation.
I disagree with you, but you know, we can agree to disagree. We always do.
That's a mistake. Next one.
Go ahead.
Anthem was a mistake?
No. I said.
You want to hear this one, Adam?
God. Let's move on. Hello. Yeah.
Hello?
Let's move on. You're making another point.
Yeah, the Prime Minister's speech. That was a great speech, sir.
Okay.
I mean, the manifestation of it is yet the same, but I believe he's going to fulfill it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, sincerity is basically akin to Lyndon Pinellas. I mean, that's the spirit I feel.
Okay. So you take the view that the Prime Minister comes across very authentically, and he is coming from a place of great honesty.
Yeah, man. Just like when the prince and his bride came over, and there were people who were the same, who were pro, like Africa, this and that, who said that they need to go back and pay us money, this and that, because they only this and that. But you know what? When I look at those people and things, right? I mean, I look at them not to say they're Caucasian or black. When I look at them, right, all I saw was just pure truth and honesty and just sincerity and love. That's what I saw, and they being decent people, and for them to be
That's what you saw where? With who?
What do you mean with the prince and his wife when they came over?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, when people were carrying on, like, you know, they need to pay us this and that and that.
Yeah,
people decent people, man.
Yeah, okay.
We need decent people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
You know, me and you disagree too much for to start a conversation because we're going to be here all
night. What do you
mean?
Arguing. You disagree with that?
Yeah, I disagree with that.
Are you serious?
Yes, 100% serious.
What, because of what happened in the past?
Yes.
I mean, just the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, you know.
Yeah, I understand.
And the Commonwealth was under the British, and even Jamaica was under the Commonwealth, yes. And that's the UPP then.
I understand. I'm giving you my honest view. I have a sovereignty over that. My view.
I never know you to feel like that. But yeah. I know you're pro-African and anti-European, though.
I'm not anti-anything.
So you're just in between everything?
No, I'm not in between. I have a position on things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but you keep up your wake. I mean, you continue to be in our business. Continually, and I guess you got to be an happiness, and you need to play our anthem, though. I thought you.
No, certainly, if persons took it as me cutting the anthem,
that's an insult.
I apologize. It's not an insult.
No, but you got to play that. You can't let it stop our anthem.
The fact of the matter is that it was the wrong clip. It just was the wrong.
Yeah, but
clip.
Then once you start, you can't stop it. That's our national anthem. You can't disrespect that in the Bahamas. And
all right. Thank you so much for your contribution. Go ahead. We have the right clip now, Mr. Producer. All right, let's take it.
I'm not alone in thinking that we can do more to build stronger communities and a stronger nation. The conversations and images on social media too often represents us as a violent, conflict-driven people. In our own lives, we know many wonderful Bahamians who do so much to strengthen the ties that bind us. The nurse who stays past a shift to care for a patient who needs her. The teacher who goes the extra mile for a student who is struggling. The grandmother who looks out for the children on her street who might be short on meals or affection. The pastor who knows who in his flock needs extra healing. We shouldn't have a conversation about our national development without acknowledging that the work done by the angels among us should be supported, lifted up, and encouraged.
I think those were some important words, and on the line, you know, just like the caller said just now, that it on the line a sense of real deep, broad commitment to this idea of drilling down and going to, you know, kind of rolling up your sleeves and going into the place with the ordinary folk and looking at who is doing good, who is thriving, but also understanding what people need for their own growth and development. What is needed or what contributes to the building of a society and the creation of a culture which terminates into this whole idea of dignity of achievement, greater economic equity, fairness, so on and so forth. So I heard the Prime Minister drilling into those, and as you hear from his words, talking about creating that culture of development. So let's take the next clip where he talks about trust, which I think is a very, very important aspect of national development going forward.
There's some issue of governance which I think will act as a brake on national development unless we resolve them. Principal among these is the issue of trust. We are at a stage in history where there's very little trust between the people and the government. This is true not just of us here in the Bahamas, but we can do something about it here. In our view, the lack of trust has arisen because of the lack of transparency, a lack of accountability, and a lack of delivery.
So a lack of transparency, a lack of accountability, and a lack of delivery. Now, to the texter who says that these are just words and they've been said many times before, but let's give the Prime Minister the benefit of the doubt, because what he is articulating there is, in one sense, a commitment. He's saying to us, the people listening, that one of the reasons development does not take place in a smoother way, one of the reasons that development sometimes is retarded is because there's a lack of trust between the populace and those who lead. He's articulating that very clearly. So by extension, by extrapolation, he's saying, or ought to be saying, or anyone would be considered reasonable to assume that he's saying, that's not how I am going to do it. I won't do it like that. I'm going to do it differently, and I am going to ensure that there is transparency, there is accountability, but also importantly, that there's going to be delivery of what is required, what is promised, what is needed, what is necessary for the advancement of the country. Very fundamental points. Let's take number three.
Even though it is still early days, we expect to be held accountable for our decisions and actions. And we hope and expect that everyone in political life shares the same willingness to be held accountable. It is a key component in building trust. In fact, lack of accountability especially undermines trust and confidence in government. When people see politicians transgressing, but with no apparent consequences, it's bad for democracy. We are determined to turn things around. Along with trust and accountability, we believe that when we truly deliver for the Bahamian people, when we make real the promises on which they gave us their vote, then trust truly is rebuilt.
Okay, so the Prime Minister basically doubled down on this idea of trust. And, you know, nothing that he said would entertain an argument from me. The points which he made, I think, are important. In my words, he's basically saying, look, you know, all of you people who are in leadership, when you do wrong, you should be brought to account. And we're going to change that. So there is a recognition on the part of the Prime Minister, by implication, that there are things which are happening out there within the leadership class of the country, which is affecting the development of the country, which is affecting the development of this critical element called trust, which is, in his words, really, really necessary for national growth. And it can't be continued. It has to be addressed. It has to be arrested. That's the commitment. So as I listen to the speech, I hear some really, really important values. And my texter dismissed the speech as just words, but let's give the Prime Minister the benefit of the doubt that when we go down the road and we observe the policies and we observe the pronouncement and we observe the initiatives and the programs, we already heard, we ought to have already known exactly what the Prime Minister seeks to achieve. Just within the confines of this particular lecture, an outcome which have greater positive circumstances for the greater good, for the many, not so much for the few, not just for the few. And that has to be done through changing some policies, through recognizing some of the great ills of society and fixing them. Let's take the next one, see what the Prime Minister else has to share.
Though the country is crying out for change, it is often the case that people want change but don't like to be changed. But if we work together, if every section of society is prepared to work together, that common lofty goal can come well within our reach. But it requires us to do more than just offer knee-jerk reactions to everyday events. Businesses and centers of learning must play their part. Churches and civic organizations can and should actively support national development. And the members of the press, who play such a valuable role in communicating information and shaping opinion, I encourage to also reach higher.
Yeah, quite a bit there. So the Prime Minister is saying, look, you know, all of us, we're all in this national development thing. The church, the business, the private sector, civil society, and the press. Actually, he's calling on the press to step their game up. That's how he sees it. In general terms, the call cannot be wrong. You may disagree with singling out one group or the other, but the call cannot be wrong. Because at the end of the day, it requires every single entity, generally speaking, working in the right direction to create the type of national collective energy and capacity and capability and commitment and dedication towards a common vision in order for there to be success. You know, when you take a look at, say, the United States, there's no question that they have a whole myriad of problems. But one of the things about the typical U.S. person is, one, you know, we're the best country in the world. And when we do it, we're going to outdo everybody. And everybody have a chance. And if a man has a dream and he's willing to work, then he'll have to work. Of course, we know that there are some, you know, institutionalized issues which affect different groupings, minority, black people, so on and so forth. But generally speaking, if we can zoom out from that, we see that this whole idea that you have a dream and you're in an environment with significant amount of opportunities, and if you will and you're willing and you're dedicated and you're relentless and you can persevere, you can make it. I think it's important. I think it's absolutely important that we take those words seriously and certainly hold the Prime Minister to it. He says, hold him accountable. So I think the lecture that the Prime Minister delivered was an important one. And certainly the Government Policy Institute, led by Shiva Agaleng, one of our colleagues here, is to be commended for facilitating this. These public discourses, I think, are going to be make us better. And I believe that the Prime Minister should be applauded for following through with what I consider to have been one of campaign commitment and putting it out there clearly on the table that there is a commitment to national development. We have a texter here which says, sir, ignore the last caller. Can't ignore him. He's always doing me wrong, so I can't ignore him. But chances are the Prime Minister did not even write a speech. If that is the case, how can he be taken seriously? It is all politics. I don't think the fact that the Prime Minister may not write the speech means that it's not his speech and he should not be taken seriously. In the political arena, very few people at least write the first draft of their speech. So that's not a biggie. Before the people can do all that, sir, there needs to be a plan. There is a plan. There's a plan that we're talking about, the National Development Plan. There is none. Yes, there is one. It all rise and fall on leadership. I agree with that. Not on the public. The public has a role to play. It's the leadership which is supposed to excite them in that direction, pull them together, and get them all moving, get us all moving in the right direction. Let's get the very last clip. It's not too long, but this is where the Prime Minister ended his lecture.
Government needs us all to pull together for the betterment of everyone. By working in partnership, we can spend the next 50 years building the kind of Bahamas that each of us knows in our heart is better. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attention tonight. I hope that you feel enlightened, that you've been provoked. God bless you all.
If all of us pull together, then it is possible. So I think, importantly, we are applauding the Prime Minister for having taken the steps necessary to set the country on a path which will fundamentally address, reduce, or eliminate the artificial pressures which have been identified by him in his lecture, which has maintained an adverse and consistent thread of limitation on the many throughout the development of the country to date. And as the Prime Minister said, many persons want change, but are not willing themselves to change. And so as we always end the show here, do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. You have been listening to The Essentials, The Reset. Good night, walk good, one love, and Ubuntu.